Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record Program number 664, Fun with Science, Part 6. This program is being recorded on February 22nd of the year 2009. Before we get into the main portion of the program, I want to welcome radio station KSDP in Sandpoint, Alaska, serving Southwest Alaska. Welcome to For the Record, and welcome to the mini and slowly growing network. By the way, members of the listening audience who find the information useful and who would like to do something. A lot of people say, well, I believe what you're saying, I find it important, disturbing, but what can I do? Well, there are a number of things people can do. Of course, you can use the internet to help archive and disseminate the information, because thanks to yours truly and the heroic webmaster who has helped launch the new website, there is a tremendous amount of information available at spitfirelist.com. The programs are provided free of charge to any radio station that wants to air them. So if you've got a local community radio station or a non-community radio station that wants to air the programs, they will be provided for free. So see if you can get the show on your local radio station. You can also try to get some of these books that I talk about, such as the book that I'm going to be accessing at considerable length today, The War Against the Weak by Edwin Black. Get those in your local library. Call talk shows, use the internet, use the information. In any event, this program's title, once again, welcome to KSDP in Sandpoint, Alaska. By the way, that's not Sandpoint, Idaho. That's a white supremacist epicenter. Not all the people there, maybe not even most of them, are white supremacists, but that's Sandpoint, Idaho. Different town, same name. Welcome once again to KSDP. Now, the title of the program, as veteran listeners will no doubt realize, is ironic in nature. This isn't Captain Kangaroo, the old kids TV show that baby boomers grow up with. Rather, we're going to be talking about some really insidious types of fun, the sort of fun people were not meant to have. We're going to be taking a look in particular at Nazi science, some of the experiments that were performed in Nazi concentration camps, and we're going to connect some of the dots, because the popular received wisdom, and incorrect received wisdom it is that fascism and the Third Reich and the attendant evils were somehow aberrations. I do not take a facile Marxist view that this was the inevitable outcome of the capitalist system, yabbity yabbity yabbity. On the other hand, the advent of fascism itself and the eugenics discipline, if one could call it that, that led to the Nazi extermination programs were they were inextricably linked with some of the most powerful institutions and intellectual trends of the 20th and sadly now 21st centuries. It could not be described as an aberration. And if we are to learn the lessons of history and avoid a devastating repetition of these things, we have to take a look at things as they really exist. And we're going to begin by taking a look at an interesting piece of research. Once again, baby boomers, or people that were of the age of consciousness, say, in the early 1960s, will remember the horrors of the drug thalidomide that was given to pregnant women. It was a morning sickness drug. It also apparently had some tranquilizing effects. It turned out to be a very powerful mutagen, which caused the women to give birth to children with badly deformed limbs. It now turns out that there are significant indications that that drug was not a post-World War II invention, but rather was cooked up by I.G. Farben. The following article is from The Australian of February 8th of 2009. This article is from The Times Online, and that is the London Times. It reads, it's titled, Thalidomide, quote, created by Nazis. It reads, the morning sickness drug thalidomide, which caused pregnant women to give birth to babies without arms and legs, was first developed by the Nazis, probably as part of their chemical weapons program, according to new research. Two separate academics have revealed the discovery of documents indicating that the drug did not originate with Chemie Grünenthal, the post-war German chemical firm, as has always been claimed. If, as their research suggests, thalidomide was first developed by scientists working in wartime Germany, it could have implications for the liability of the German government. So far, it has given compensation only to German victims, although the drug was distributed in 46 countries. Thousands of the drug's victims are still battling for increased financial aid to help them cope with its legacy. There are 457 thalidomides remaining in the UK, 2,700 in Germany, and a total of up to 6,000 worldwide. Mothers prescribed it between its launch in 1957 and 1961, when it was removed from the market, gave birth to children who lacked proper arms, legs, hands, and feet. Some had also suffered from brain damage and other disabilities. Dr. Martin Johnson, director of the Thalidomide Trust, which provides help for surviving victims in the UK, has written a paper detailing evidence suggesting that the drug had been developed before Grünenthal secured a patent in 1954. That company has always maintained that thalidomide was created by chance in 1953 by scientists who had tried to create an antihistamine but ended up with a tranquilizer. Johnson suspects that it was actually first produced as a possible antidote to nerve toxins such as sarin, which was developed by Dr. Otto Ambrose, a Nazi scientist who joined Grünenthal after the war. More about Otto Ambrose later. Continuing, it is now appearing increasingly likely that thalidomide was the last war crime of the Nazis, unquote, said Johnson. One document unearthed by the Thalidomide Trust shows that Grünenthal apparently purchased the trade name of the drug Contregan, and therefore probably the substance itself, from a French firm, Rhône Poulenc, which was under Nazi control during the war years. A confidential letter sent from Astra, which held the Swedish license to distribute thalidomide to its Norwegian subsidiary in 1958, states, "Unfortunately, we can't use the name Contregan in the Scandinavian countries, since Grünenthal obtained the name exclusively for the German market through an agreement with Rhône Poulenc." From 1942 onwards, Rhône Poulenc registered 14 similar drugs, all ending with the same ERGAN suffix, a characteristic unique to the firm. Many of the drugs shared properties with thalidomide, such as affecting the nervous system. Quote, "Not only is the name typical of the Rhône Poulenc brand names of the 1940s, the action of thalidomide also belongs among the range of products," said Johnson in his report. Meanwhile, the author of a forthcoming book on Nazi scientists claims to have a copy of a document written in November 1944 by a director of IG Farben, the German pharmaceutical firm, which refers to the development of a substance, the chemical formula of which matches thalidomide. Carlos Di Napoli, an Argentinian who has published books on the activities of the Nazis who fled to South America after the war, claims his book, Hitler's Laboratories, will show that the drug has its origins in the Nazi death camps. IG Farben, whose bosses, including Ambrose, were convicted of war crimes such as slavery and mass murder, ran the synthetic rubber and petrol processing plant at Auschwitz-Monowitz, which drew its labor from extermination camps. Di Napoli said the memo was sent on November 13, 1944, by Fritz Termeer, an IG Farben executive, to Karl Brandt, an SS general who was Hitler's personal physician and head of his euthanasia program. The report, in which the drug is referred to simply by a four-digit number, 4589, states that it has been tested and is ready for use. Di Napoli says he discovered the document in the IG Farben archive in 1978, but realized only recently the significance of the formula it contained. Quote, "There is absolutely no doubt of the Nazi development of and experimentation with thalidomide in the World War II camps," unquote, he said. Johnson said the 1954 patent for thalidomide implied that it had already been tested on humans, even though trials on people did not officially take place until later. Grünenthal subsequently said it had, quote, "lost," unquote, much of the testing paperwork. Johnson concluded in his report, quote, "The patent suggests that thalidomide was probably one of a number of products developed by Dierenfurth, a chemical laboratory in Auschwitz-Monowitz under the leadership of Dr. Otto Ambrose in the course of nerve gas research," unquote. Grünenthal said, quote, "To our knowledge, there was no collaboration between Grünenthal and Rhône Poulenc for the development of Contregan / thalidomide. Three Grünenthal employees discovered thalidomide, and Grünenthal is the sole inventor on the patent," unquote. Sanofi Aventis, which took over Rhône Poulenc, said it was searching its archives. Well, there are a number of interesting things to contemplate here. I alluded to Dr. Otto Ambrose. Dr. Otto Ambrose was one of the Nazis' top scientists, did research on all kinds of things, was credited with a number of very important inventions. He developed the organophosphate family of poisons, of which the nerve gases sarin and taboon were the high end. And also, Dr. Otto Ambrose invented magnetic tape. Dr. Otto Ambrose was also a war criminal and was deeply involved with the IG Farben experiments on human beings. Dr. Otto Ambrose, like a great many of the top Nazi scientists, was brought over to the United States, his war criminal status notwithstanding, and was put to work expanding on his wartime research in the United States for the purposes of expanding the U.S. national security arsenal for the Cold War. As I've said many times, I think in many ways this country's epitaph could be what Alan Dulles said when someone criticized him for recruiting Nazis for the CIA, many of them war criminals and SS men as well. He said, quote, "We needed, quote, any bastard as long as he's anti-communist," unquote. And I think America's short-sighted and entirely tactical approach to things has led this really great and wonderful country to the brink of ruin, because the Underground Reich and other elements of darkness, they think strategically and they think hundreds of years in advance, and I'm afraid that American democracy may very well be fatally compromised by the liaison with people like Dr. Otto Ambrose. By the way, the person who brought him into the United States was none other than J. Peter Grace, the famous industrialist, now deceased. J. Peter Grace was a member of the Knights of Malta. There has been a recent case in which a town in Montana that was adjacent to a Grace Industries asbestos mine is experiencing, many of the residents are experiencing all kinds of problems from the asbestos. That's the same Grace. It is amazing grace indeed, but of a very, very bad kind. So do note that Dr. Otto Ambrose was brought into the United States under the Project Paperclip. Also, take note of IG Farben. IG Farben dominates the chemical industry, dominates the pharmaceutical industry, did so before World War II, during World War II, and after World War II. IG Farben and its member companies, it was officially broken up after the war, now rather like the Standard Oil Trust. It's beginning to re-coalesce, to coin a term. IG Farben was one of the foundational elements of what I call the Underground Reich, literally a Third Reich that went underground and utilizing its cartel connections and consummate economic power, has perpetuated itself in underground mafia-like fashion using that tremendous economic power as its primary lever. There are a number of books available for download for free on the Spitfire website, in addition to an incredible number of references in the various programs. The book The Devil's Chemists, the book Treason's Peace, Germany's Master Plan, the book The Crime and Punishment of IG Farben are all available on the Spitfire website for download for free, as is the consummately important Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile by Paul Manning, which talks about IG Farben and the Bormann Capital Network. We're going to touch back on thalidomide. One has to wonder whether it was simply profit that was driving this or whether perhaps it was something else. Thalidomide was by no means, if in fact that research is accurate, thalidomide is by no means the only IG Farben drug that was invented for World War II and then had its name changed and remarketed afterward. Among the drugs that were developed by the Bayer Company, the inventor of aspirin and a great many other drugs, was heroin. That is the highly addictive opiate, originally developed as a cough suppressant, especially effective in children, which I've no doubt that it was very effective in suppressing coughs, as well as quite a bit of other behavior. Bayer developed heroin, and in the run-up to World War II, the Nazis were afraid that the British naval blockade would interdict their access to raw opium. Opium is, of course, necessary for the production of morphine, which is used to treat casualties. So IG Farben went to work developing a synthetic morphine, which would not require a opium base for production, and they developed a synthetic morphine, which they named Dolophine, D-O-L-O-P-H-I-N-E, in honor of Adolf Hitler. Then after World War II, the drug was deemed very useful, and quoting here from The Crime and Punishment of IG Farben, and talking about Bayer, "Bayer's pharmaceutical venture was even larger than that of Höchst. Out of its laboratories emerged aspirin, the world's most famous home remedy for pain and fever. Bayer was also responsible for the introduction of heroin, which it sold as a cure for morphine addiction and as a cough suppressant especially effective in children. Later, the Bayer laboratories developed methadone in preparation for World War II as a synthetic substitute for morphine. It was originally named Dolefine in honor of Adolf Hitler. Today, methadone is used principally in the treatment of heroin addiction. So again, what we call methadone, used to treat heroin addiction and highly addictive in and of itself, was originally called Dolefine in honor of Adolf Hitler. One can only wonder how many other drugs that are on the market were developed in a similar manner or by similar elements. One of the best known of the Nazi experimenters on human beings, of course, was the Angel of Death of Auschwitz. And by the way, there was the reference there to Auschwitz-Monowitz. In For the Record number 370, we accessed allegations by a European research that the slave labor camps at Auschwitz-Monowitz were actually under the direction of, or the stewardship, I would say. He was not physically present, but were under the stewardship of Prescott Bush Sr. That is the grandfather of the now mercifully recently ex-president George W. Bush. Perhaps the best known of the Nazi experimenters at Auschwitz was, of course, Dr. Josef Mengele, the Angel of Death. And one of his best known elements of brutal research were his notorious experiments on twins, in which he did all kinds of horrible experiments on twins that resulted in a death and deformation for those twins. Mengele's work on twins may very well not have ended with World War II. The following is from The Telegraph, a British paper. This is by Nick Evans in Buenos Aires. It's dated January 23rd of 2009 and headlined, "Nazi Angel of Death Josef Mengele Created Twin Town in Brazil," unquote. Subheaded, "The Nazi Dr. Josef Mengele is responsible for the astonishing number of twins in a small Brazilian town," an Argentine historian has claimed. It reads, "The steely-hearted Angel of Death, whose mission was to create a master race fit for the Third Reich, was the resident medic at Auschwitz from May of 1943 until his flight in the face of the Red Army advance in January of 1945. His task was to carry out experiments to discover by what method of genetic quirk twins were produced, and then to artificially increase the Aryan birth rate for his master, Adolf Hitler. Now," an historian claims, "Mengele's notorious experiments may have borne fruit. For years, scientists have failed to discover why as many as 1 in 5 pregnancies in a small Brazilian town may have resulted in twins, most of them blonde-haired and blue-eyed. But residents of Candido Godoy now claim that Mengele made repeated visits there in the early 1960s, posing at first as a vet, but then offering medical treatment to the women of the town. Shuttling between Argentina, Paraguay, and Brazil, he managed to evade justice before his death in 1979, but his dreams of a Nazi master race appeared unfulfilled. In a new book, Mengele, the Angel of Death in South America, the Argentine historian Jorge Camarasa, a specialist in the post-war Nazi flight to South America, has painstakingly pieced together the Nazi doctor's mysterious later years. After speaking to the townspeople of Candido Godoy, he is convinced that Mengele continued his genetic experiments with twins with startling results. He reveals how, after working with cattle farmers in Argentina to increase their stock, Mengele fled the country after fellow Nazi Adolf Eichmann was kidnapped by Israeli agents. He claims that Mengele found refuge in the German enclave of Colonias Unidas, Paraguay, and from there, in 1963, began to make regular trips to another predominantly German community just over the border in Brazil, the farming community of Candido Godoy. And, Mr. Camaras claims, it was here that soon after, the birth rate of twins began to spiral. Quote, "I think Candido Godoy may have been Mengele's laboratory where he finally managed to fulfill his dreams of creating a master race of blonde-haired, blue-eyed Aryans," he said. Again quoting, "There is testimony that he attended women, followed their pregnancies, treated them with new types of drugs and preparations, that he talked of artificial insemination in human beings, and that he continued working with animals, proclaiming that he was capable of getting cows to produce male twins," unquote. The urbane German who arrived in Candido Godoy was remembered with fondness by many of the townspeople. "He told us he was a vet," said Aloisi Finkler, a local farmer interviewed by Mr. Camarasas. He asked about illnesses among our animals and told us not to worry, he could cure them. He appeared to be a cultured and dignified man. Another farmer, Leonardo Bouffre, said he went from farm to farm checking the animals. He checked them for TB and injected those that were infected. He said he could carry out artificial insemination of cows and humans, which we thought impossible, as in those days it was unheard of, unquote. But the Nazi eugenicists did not concentrate on animals alone. A former mayor and town doctor, Anuncio Flores da Silva, set out to try to solve the town's mystery. He interviewed hundreds of people and discovered one character who kept on cropping up, an itinerant medic who called himself Rudolf Weiss. Dr. da Silva said, quote, "In the testimonies we collected, we came across women who were treated by him. He appeared to be some sort of rural medic who went from house to house. He attended women who had varicose veins and gave them a potion which he carried in a bottle or tablets which he brought with him. Sometimes he carried out dental work, and everyone remembers he used to take blood," unquote. The people of Candido Godoy now largely accept that a Nazi war criminal was an inadvertent guest of theirs for several years in the early 1960s. The town's official crest shows two identical profiles, and a road sign welcomes visitors to, quote, "a farming community and the land of the twins," unquote. There is also a museum, the House of the Twins. While the twins' birth rate varies widely in different countries, it is typically about 1 in 80 pregnancies, a statistic that has left Mr. Camarasas certain in his claim that Mengele was successfully pursuing his dreams of creating a master race, a real-life boys from Brazil. Quote, "Nobody knows for sure exactly what date Mengele arrived in Candido Godoy, but the first twins were born in 1963, the year in which we first hear reports of his presence," unquote. He said, one thing that comes to mind right off the bat, obviously there are indications here, at least from the allegations here, that Mengele's research continued. Mengele claimed that he could have humans birthed by cows. I wonder to what extent some of the cattle mutilations in the American Midwest might have been a cover. You know, the cover story was either, you know, our brothers from space, unquote, or as I call it, space aliens from Uranus, or perhaps, you know, Satanists, etc. A lot of people, myself included, suspect that it might actually have, those might have been nonsense covers in order to distract people from some very real experimentation that was going on. Now, who exactly was doing the experimenting remains a subject of theoretical speculation. But I think there are some very serious indications that the suppositions of Mr. Camarasas there are absolutely accurate. And by the way, there's a picture that accompanies that article, and it's got a bunch of pairs of the twins, identical twins, and an awful lot of them do have blonde hair and blue eyes, which are not all that common in the country of Brazil. There are a number of broadcasts, Miscellaneous Archive Show M12, and also a later show accessing the book The Nazi Connection by Stefan Kuhl, and the precise references will be in the descriptions for the record program 664 that talk about the eugenics movement. The eugenics movement was a mainstream intellectual slash scientific movement that gave birth to the Nazi horrors of World War II. And indeed, eugenics thinking, the idea of deliberately sculpting, so to speak, human reproductive capacity and human survivability in order to create a superior brand of humans, that was something that was championed by many mainstream thinkers. The first of the main Nazi racial laws, the Law for the Protection of German Blood and Honor, was basically a Germanic adaptation of the model eugenic sterilization law crafted by an American eugenicist named Paul Popeno and published in a strange part of the American West called California. Seems to me I recall hearing something about that California at some point. The point that I'm making here is that, obviously, and it's fleshed out at much greater length in some of the broadcasts that will be annotated in the description for the program, is that the Nazi racial excesses and the horrors of the Nazi regime grew directly out of Western mainstream intellectual currents, which did not originate with the Nazis by any means, and which did not end with the formal conclusion of World War II. And we're going to be going into that at great length for much of the rest of the program. Now, the science of eugenics, which grew out of the mental hygiene movement, was really pseudoscience would be a better way of putting it, but it engaged many of the most formidable scientific and research minds and, for our purposes, significantly institutions of the time. The point that I'm making is rather like fascism itself. The Nazi racial excesses, their horrors, and the intellectual foundations and legal foundations for those horrors were not an aberration. I again would not present some facile class-oriented thing saying this was the inevitable outgrowth of the corrupt capitalist system, yabbity, yabbity, yabbity. But by God, with the international economic situation in dire peril, and with many people, as we'll see next week, fearing that a continued economic collapse could actually once again lead to the mass resuscitation of fascism, I think it is absolutely essential that we take a good, long, hard look at eugenics and some of the institutions that championed eugenics and how in turn it led to the Nazi racial research. Again, there are a number of books about it. There's a wonderful book, a very short book and readable, called The Nazi Connection by Stefan Kuhl, K-U-U-M-L-H-L. Hard and soft cover editions, Oxford University Press. There's also a very good book, which is current, a much longer and intense book, called The War Against the Weak, subtitled Eugenics and America's Campaign to Create a Master Race. It's authored by Edwin Black, who is also the author of The Transfer Agreement and the book IBM and the Holocaust. Indeed, that's a book that we've spoken about in the past, IBM and the Holocaust, that is. IBM was one of the many very powerful companies that was inextricably linked with the operations of the Third Reich. Referring to the concentration camps and the victims of Mengele and so forth, many people are, of course, aware of the concentration camp survivors, also, of course, the ones who died there, but how they had numbers tattooed on their wrist. Well, those numbers were the Hollerith numbers. I'm not sure how that's pronounced, H-O-W-E-R-I-T-H. That was the tabulating machine that was manufactured by IBM and which was used by the Germans to keep very close tabs on their prisoners. That number was basically an IBM number, the number that they had tattooed on their wrists. And what we're going to be looking at in for a nice chunk of the rest of the program is how, first of all, the eugenics research in Germany, and we've spoken about this in the past, was not only very closely allied intellectually with eugenics thinking in the United States, but how it also was funded in considerable measure by powerful American institutions. It would be impossible to exaggerate the degree of support that American eugenicists gave to their German counterparts. One of the epicenters of German eugenics thinking, and later their racial excesses and horrors, was the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute in Berlin, and specifically one of their institutes for the study of race, anthropology, and heredity, etc., was a primary vehicle of reception of funds from the Rockefeller Foundation. The Rockefeller Foundation heavily capitalized the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute, and in turn, it was that very same subgroup of the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute that spawned the research at Auschwitz on the twins. And, of course, Mengele was the fellow who was doing that. But, again, history has recorded Mengele's work on the twins as some sort of weird aberration. Yeah, it was horrible. Yeah, it was a terrible thing to do. But it is not seen as something that was in any way connected with powerful trends and institutions in the rest of society. And in point of fact, it was. Because in point of fact, the study of twins was something that was very profoundly emphasized by eugenics researchers and ultimately was seen by the harsher among those researchers as reaching its peak. And they endorsed it with the Nazi research done in the concentration camps. But we're going to be getting into the war against the weak, the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute, and the Rockefeller Foundation in side two of the program, because this wraps up side one of For the Record program number 664, Fun with Science, part six. This program is being recorded on February 22nd of the year 2009. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.